Hi, and welcome to Serial Killers Weekly. I'm your host, D. Cooley. And tonight we will be concluding our talk of Jeffrey Dahmer. I planned on doing this a couple days ago, but life happened. So this will be Thursday's episode. I will have a bonus, either episode that I will record tonight or excerpt at the end of this, depending on time. So last when we left off, Dahmer had killed Bradoff's and acidified his torso, and along with the other victims he'd killed in the previous month. So here we go. On July 22nd, 1991, Dahmer approached three men with the offer of $100 to accompany him to his apartment to pose nude for photographs, drink beer, and simply keep him company. One of the trio, 32-year-old Tracy Edwards, agreed to accompany him to his apartment. Upon entering Dahmer's apartment, Edwards noted a foul odor and several boxes of hydrochloric acid on the floor, which Dahmer claimed to use for cleaning bricks. After some minor conversation, Edwards responded to Dahmer's request to turn his head and view his tropical fish, whereupon Dahmer placed handcuff on his wrist. When Edwards asked what's happening, Dahmer unsuccessfully attempted to cuff his wrists together and told Edwards to accompany him to the bedroom to pose for nude foot pictures. While inside the bedroom, Edwards noted nude male posters on the wall and that a videotape, The Exorcist 3, was playing. He also noted a blue 57-gallon drum in the corner, which a strong odor emanated. Dahmer then brandished a knife and informed Edwards he intended to take nude pictures of him. In an attempt to appease Dahmer, Edwards unbuttoned his shirt, saying he would allow him to do so if he would remove the handcuffs and put the knife away. In response to this promise, Dahmer simply turned his attention towards the TV. Edwards observed Dahmer rocking back and forth and chanting before turning his attention back to him. He placed his head on Edwards' chest, listened to his heartbeat, and with the knife pressed against his intended victim, informed Edwards he intended to eat his heart. In continuous attempts to prevent Dahmer from attacking him, Edwards repeated that he was Dahmer's friend and that he was not going to run away. Edwards had decided he was going to either jump from the window or run through the unlocked front door the next available opportunity. When Edwards next stated he needed to use the bathroom, he asked if he could sit with a beer in the living room where there was air conditioning. Dahmer consented, and the pair walked to the living room. When Edwards exited the bathroom inside the living room, Edwards waited until he observed Dahmer had a momentary lapse of concentration before requesting to use the bathroom again. When Edwards rose from the couch, he noted Dahmer was not holding the handcuffs, whereupon Edwards punched him in the face, knocking Dahmer off balance, and ran out the front door. At 11:30 p.m. on July 22nd, Edwards flagged down two Milwaukee police officers, Robert Roth and Ralph Mueller, at the corner of North 25th Street. The officers noted that Edwards had a handcuff attached to his wrist, whereupon he explained to the officers that a freak had placed the handcuffs upon him and asked him if the police could remove him. When the officer's handcuff keys failed to fit the brand of handcuffs, Edwards agreed to accompany the officers to the apartment where Edwards stated he had spent the previous 5 hours before escaping. When the officers and Edwards arrived at apartment 213, Dahmer invited the trio inside and acknowledged he had indeed placed the handcuffs on Edwards, although he offered no explanation as to why he had done so. At this point, Edwards divulged to the officers that Dahmer had also brandished a large knife upon him, and that this had happened in the bedroom. Dahmer made no comment to the revelation, indicating to one of the officers, Mueller, that the key to the handcuffs was in the bedside dresser. As Mueller entered the bedroom, Dahmer attempted to pass Mueller to himself to retrieve the key, whereupon the second officer presented Roth, informed him to back off. Whereas the second officer present, Roth, informed him to back off. In the bedroom, Mueller noted there was indeed a large knife beneath the bed. He also saw an open drawer which, upon closer inspection, contained scores of Polaroid pictures, many of which were of human bodies in various stages of dismemberment. Mueller noted the decor indicated that he had been taken in the very apartment in which they were standing. Mueller walked into the living room to show them to his partner, uttering the words, "These are for real." When Dahmer saw that Mueller was holding several Polaroids, he fought with the officers in an effort to resist arrest. The officers quickly overpowered him, cuffed his hands behind his back, and called a second squad car for backup. At this point, Mueller opened the refrigerator to reveal a freshly severed head of a black male on the bottom shelf. As Dahmer lay pinned on the floor beneath Roth, he turned his head towards the officers and muttered the words, "For what I did, I should be dead." A more detailed search of the apartment conducted by the Milwaukee Police Criminal Investigation Bureau revealed a total of 4 severed heads in Dahmer's kitchen. A total of 7 skulls, some painted, some bleached, were found in Dahmer's bedroom and inside a closet. In addition, investigators discovered collected blood drippings from a tray at the bottom of Dahmer's refrigerator, plus 2 human hearts, and a portion of arm muscle, each wrapped inside plastic bags upon the shelves in Dahmer's freezer. Investigators discovered an entire torso, plus a bag of human organs and flesh stuck to the ice at the bottom. Elsewhere in apartment 213, investigators discovered 2 entire skeletons, a pair of severed hands, 2 severed and preserved penises, a mummified scalp, and a 57-gallon drum, 3 further dismembered torsos dissolving in an acid solution. A total of 74 Polaroid pictures detailing the dismemberment of Dahmer's victims was found. In reference to the recovery of the body parts and artifacts at 924 North 25th Street, the chief medical examiner later stated it was more like dismantling someone's museum than an actual crime scene. Beginning in the early hours of July 23, 1991, Dahmer was questioned by Detective Patrick Kennedy as to the murders he had committed and the evidence found in his apartment. Over the following 2 weeks, Kennedy and later Detective Patrick Murphy conducted numerous interviews with Dahmer, which when combined totaled over 60 hours. Dahmer waived his right to have a lawyer present throughout his interrogations, adding he wished to confess all as he had created this horror, and it only makes sense that I do everything to put an end to it. He readily admitted to having murdered 16 young men in Wisconsin since 1987, with one further victim, Stephen Hicks, killed in Ohio back in 1978. Most of Dahmer's victims had been rendered unconscious prior to their murder, although some had died as a result of having acid or boiling water injected into their brain. As he had no memory of the murder of Tuomi, he was unsure whether he was unconscious when beaten to death, although he did concede it was possible that his viewing the exposed chest of Tuomi while a drunken stupor may have led him to unsuccessfully attempt to tear Tuomi's heart from his chest. Almost all the murders Dahmer committed after moving to Oxford Apartments had involved a ritual of posing victims' bodies in a suggestive position, typically with the chest out, thrust outwards, prior to dismembering. Dahmer readily admitted to engaging in necrophilia with several of the victims' bodies, including performing sexual acts with their viscera as he dismembered their bodies in the bathtub. Having noted that much of the blood pooled inside the victim's chest after death, Dahmer first removed their internal organs and then suspended the torso so that the blood drained into the bathtub before dicing any organs he did not wish to retain and paring the flesh from the body. The bones he wished to dispose of were pulverized or acidified with Soilex and bleach solutions used to the aid of preservation of skeletons and skulls he wished to keep. In addition, Dahmer confessed to having consumed the hearts, livers, biceps, and portion of the thighs of several victims killed within the previous year. Describing the increase in his rate of killing in the 2 months prior to his arrest, Dahmer stated he had been completely swept along with his compulsion to kill, adding, "It was an incessant and never-ending desire to be with someone at whatever cost. Someone good-looking, really nice-looking. It just filled my thoughts all day long." When asked why he had preserved a total of 7 skulls and the entire skeletons of 2 victims, Dahmer stated he had been in the process of constructing a private altar of victim skulls, which he intended to display on a black table located in the living room, upon which he had to photograph the bodies of many of his victims. This display of skulls was to be adorned on each side with the complete skeletons of Miller and Lacey. The 4 severed heads found in the kitchen were to be removed of the flesh and used in this altar. as was the skull of the last one future victim, of at least one future victim. Incense sticks were to be placed at each end of the table, above which Dahmer intended to place a larger blue lamp, with extending blue globe lights. The entire construction was to be placed before the window, covered with a black opaque shower curtain, in front of which Dahmer intended to sit in a black leather chair. When asked in November 18, 1991 interview who the altar was dedicated to, Dahmer replied, "Myself. It was a place where I could feel at home." He further described his intended altar as a place of meditation from where he believed he could draw a sense of power, adding, "If this, his arrest, had happened 6 months later, that's what they would have found." On July 25, 1991, Dahmer was charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder. By August 22nd, he had been charged with further 11 murders committed in Wisconsin. On September 14th, investigators in Ohio, having uncovered hundreds of bone fragments in the woodland behind the address in which Dahmer had confessed to killing his first victim, formally identified 2 molars and a vertebrae with x-ray records of Hicks. 3 days later, Dahmer was charged by authorities in Ohio with Hicks' murder. Dahmer was not charged with the attempted murder of Edwards, nor with the murder of Toomey. He was not charged with Toomey's murder because the Milwaukee County District Attorney only brought charges where murder could be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and Dahmer had no memory of actually committing this particular murder, for which no physical evidence of the crime existed. A scheduled preliminary hearing on January 13, 1992, Dahmer pleaded guilty but insane to 15 counts of murder. Dahmer's trial began on January 30, 1992. He was tried in Milwaukee for the 15 counts of first-degree murder before George Lawrence Graham. By pleading guilty on January 13 to the charges brought before him, Dahmer had waived his rights to the initial trial to establish guilt, as defined in Wisconsin law. The issue debated by opposing counsels at Dahmer's trial was to determine whether he suffered from either a mental or a personality disorder. The prosecution claiming that any disorders did not deprive Dahmer from the ability to appreciate the criminality of his conduct or to deprive him of the ability to resist his impulses. The defense argued that Dahmer suffered from a mental disease and was driven by obsessions and impulses he was unable to control. Defense experts argued that Dahmer was insane due to his necrophilic drive. His compulsion to have sexual encounters with corpses. Defense expert Dr. Fred Berlin testified that Dahmer was unable to confirm his conduct at the time and that he committed the crimes because he was suffering from paraphilia, or more specifically, necrophilia. Dr. Judith Becker, a professor of psychiatry and psychology, was a second expert witness for the defense. Becker also diagnosed Dahmer with necrophilia. The final defense expert to testify, forensic psychiatrist Dr. Carl Wallstrom, diagnosed Dahmer with necrophilia, borderline personality disorder, schizotypal personality disorder, alcohol dependence, and a psychotic disorder. The prosecution rejected the defense's argument that Dahmer was insane. Forensic psychiatrist Dr. Philip Resnick testified that Dahmer did not suffer from primary necrophilia because he preferred live sexual partners, as evidenced by his efforts to create unresistant, submissive sexual partners devoid of rational thought and to those whose needs he did not have to cater. Another prosecution expert to testify, Dr. Fred Fosdell, testified to his belief that Dahmer was without mental disease or defect at the time he committed the murders. He described Dahmer as a calculating and cunning individual, able to differentiate between right and wrong, with the ability to control his actions. Although Fosdell did state that his belief that Dahmer suffered from paraphilia, his conclusion was that Dahmer was not a sadist. The final witness to appear for the prosecution, forensic psychiatrist Park Dietz, began his testimony on February 12th. Dietz testified that he did not believe Dahmer to be suffering from any mental disease or defect at the time that the crimes were committed, stating, "Dahmer went to great lengths to be alone with his victim and have no witnesses." He explained that there was ample evidence that Dahmer prepared in advance for each murder, therefore his crimes were not impulsive. Although Dietz did not concede any acquisition of paraphilia was not a matter of personal choice, He also stated he believed that Dahmer's habit of becoming intoxicated prior to committing each of the murders was significant, stating if he had a compulsion to kill, he would not have to drink alcohol. He had to drink alcohol to overcome his inhibition to do the crime, which he would rather not do. Dietz also noted that Dahmer strongly identified with evil and corrupt characters from both The Exorcist 3 and The Return of the Jedi, particularly the level of power held by these characters. Expounding on the significance of these movies on Dahmer's psyche and many of the murders committed at the Oxford apartments, Dietz explained that Dahmer occasionally viewed scenes from these films before searching for victims. Dietz diagnosed Dahmer with the substance abuse disorder, paraphilia, and schizotypical personality disorder. Two court-appointed mental health professionals testifying independently of either prosecution or defense were forensic psychiatrist George Palermo and clinical psychologist Samuel Friedman. Palermo stated that the murders were a result of pent-up aggression within himself. He killed those men because he wanted to kill the source of his homosexual attraction to them. In killing them, he killed what he hated in himself. Palermo concluded that Dahmer was a sexual sadist and an antisocial personality disorder, but legally sane. Friedman testified that it was longing for companionship that caused Dahmer to kill. He stated, "Mr. Dahmer is not psychotic. He spoke kindly of Dahmer, describing him as amiable, pleasant to be with, courteous in a sense of humor, conventionally handsome, and charming in a manner. He was, and still, a bright young man." He diagnosed Dahmer with a personality disorder, but not otherwise specified, featuring borderline, obsessive-compulsive, and sadistic traits. The trial lasted only 2 weeks. On February 14th, both counsels delivered their closing arguments to the jury. Each counsel was allowed to speak for 2 hours. Defense attorney Gerald Boyle argued first, repeatedly harking of the testimony of the mental health professionals, almost all of whom had agreed Dahmer was suffering from mental disease. Boyle argued that Dahmer's compulsive killings had been a result of a sickness he discovered, not chose. Boyle portrayed Dahmer as a desperately lonely and profoundly sick individual, so out of control, he could not conform his conduct anymore. Following the defense counsel's 75-minute closing argument, Michael McCann delivered his closing argument for the prosecution, describing Dahmer as a sane man in full control of his actions who simply strove to avoid detection. McCann argued that the act of murder was committed in hostility, anger, resentment, frustration, and hatred, and that the 15 victims for whose murder he was tried died merely to afford Dahmer a period of sexual pleasure. McCann further argued that pleading guilty but insane to the charges, Dahmer was seeking to escape responsibility for his crimes. On February 15th, the court reconvened to hear the verdict. Dahmer was ruled to be sane and not suffering from a mental disorder at the time of each of the 15 murders for which he tried. Although in each count, two of the 12 jurors signified their dissent. On the first two counts, Dahmer was sentenced to life imprisonment plus 10 years, with the remaining 13 counts carrying mandatory sentence of life plus 70 years. The death penalty was not an option for Judge Graham to consider at the penalty phase, as Wisconsin had abolished capital punishment in 1853. Upon hearing Dahmer's sentencing, his father Lionel and stepmother Sherry requested to be allowed a 10-minute private meeting with their son before he was transferred to Columbia Correctional Institute in Portage to begin his sentence. The request was granted, and the trio exchanged hugs and well wishes before Dahmer was escorted away. 3 months after the conviction in Milwaukee, Dahmer was extradited to Ohio to be tried for the murder of his first victim, Stephen Hicks. In a court hearing lasting just 45 minutes, Dahmer again pleaded guilty to the charges. He was sentenced to a 16th term of life imprisonment, May 1st, 1992. Upon sentencing, Dahmer was transferred to the Columbia Correctional Institution for the first year of his incarceration. Dahmer was placed in solitary confinement due to concerns for his physical safety should he come into contact with fellow inmates. With Dahmer's consent, after 1 year in solitary confinement, he was transferred to a less secure unit, where he assigned a 2-hour daily work detail cleaning the toilet block. Shortly after completing his lengthy confessions in 1991, Dahmer had requested to Detective Murphy that he be given a copy of the Bible. This request was granted, and Dahmer gradually devoted himself to Christianity and became a born-again Christian. On his father's urging, he also read creationist books from the Institute for Creation Research. In May 1994, Dahmer was baptized by Roy Ratcliffe, a minister in the Church of Christ and a graduate of Oklahoma Christian University in the prison whirlpool. Following his baptism, Ratcliffe visited Dahmer on a weekly basis up until November 1994. Dahmer and Ratcliffe regularly discussed the prospect of death, and Dahmer questioned whether he was sinning against God by continuing to live. Referring to his crimes in a 1994 interview with Stone Phillips on Dateline NBC, Dahmer had stated, "If a person doesn't think that there is a God to be accountable to, then what's the point in trying to modify your behavior to keep it within acceptable ranges? That's how I thought anyway." In July 1994, a fellow inmate, Osvaldo Durethi, attempted to slash Dahmer's throat with a razor embedded in a toothbrush as Dahmer returned to his cell from Ratliff's weekly church service conducted in the prison chapel. Dahmer received superficial wounds and was not seriously hurt in the incident. According to Dahmer's family, he had long been ready to die and accepted any punishment which he might endure in prison. In addition to his father and stepmother maintaining regular contact, Dahmer's mother Joyce also maintained regular contact with her son. Joyce related that in her weekly phone calls, whenever she expressed concerns for her son's physical well-being, Dahmer responded with comments to the effect of, "It doesn't matter, Mom. I don't care if something happens to me." On the morning of November 28, 1994, Dahmer left his cell to conduct his assigned work detail. Accompanying him were two fellow inmates, Jesse Anderson and Christopher Scarbett. The trio were left unsupervised in the showers of the prison gym for approximately 20 minutes. At approximately 8:10 a.m., Dahmer was discovered on the floor of the bathrooms at the gym, suffering from extreme head and facial wounds. He had been severely bludgeoned about the head and face with a 20-inch metal bar. His head had also been repeatedly struck against the wall in the assault. Although Dahmer was still alive, he was rushed to a nearby hospital. He was pronounced dead 1 hour later. Anderson had also been beaten with the same instrument and died 2 days later from his wounds. Scarver, who was serving a life sentence for a murder committed in 1990, informed authorities he had first attacked Dahmer with the metal bar as Dahmer was cleaning a staff locker room before attacking Anderson as he cleaned an inmate locker room. According to Scarver, Dahmer did not yell or make any noise as he was attacked. Immediately after attacking both men, Scarver, who was thought to be schizophrenic, returned to his cell and informed the prison guard, "God told me to do it. Jesse Anderson, Jeffrey Dahmer are dead." Scarver was adamant he had not planned the attacks in advance. Although he later divulged to investigators he had concealed the 20-inch iron bar used to kill both men in his clothing shortly before the killing. Upon learning of his death, Dahmer's mother Joyce responded angrily to the media. "Now is everybody happy? Now that he's been bludgeoned to death, is that good enough for everyone?" The response of the families of Dahmer's victims was mixed. Although it appears most were pleased with his death, the district attorney who prosecuted Dahmer cautioned against turning Scarver into a folk hero, knowing that Dahmer's death was still murder. On May 15, 1995, Scarver was sentenced to two additional terms of life imprisonment for the murders of Dahmer and Anderson. Although Scarver had confessed in 1994 to having concealed the weapon used to kill Dahmer and Anderson in his clothing on the morning of the murder in 2015, he publicly stated the murders of Dahmer and Anderson had resulted from a confrontation in which one of these men had poked him in the back as the three had begun their assigned work detail in his renewed account of the events. Scarver claimed that the two had laughed at him when he had turned around in response before Dahmer and Anderson each walked into separate rooms to begin their cleaning duty, with Scarver following Dahmer toward the staff locker room. Scarver alleges that immediately before murdering Dahmer, he had cornered him, presented a newspaper article detailing Dahmer's crimes, and demanded that Dahmer answer whether the account was true. Scarver further alleged he had been revolted by Dahmer's crimes, that Dahmer had been openly unrepentant, and Dahmer taunted prison employees and fellow inmates by slapping his prison food into imitations of severed limbs. By shaping his prison food into imitations of severed limbs, complete with ketchup to simulate blood splattering. And that the prison staff, knowing Scarver's hated for Dahmer, had deliberately left the two men unsupervised so that he could kill him. Furthermore, Scarver stated that Dahmer was so disliked by fellow inmates that he required a personal escort of at least one guard whenever he was out of his cell to prevent inmates from attacking him. Dahmer had stated in his will that he wished for no services to be conducted and that he wished to be cremated. In September 1995, Dahmer's body was cremated and his ashes divided between his parents. On August 5th, 1991, as the nature and scale of Dahmer's crimes initially came to light, a candlelight vigil to celebrate and heal the Milwaukee community was attended by more than 400 people. Present at the vigil were community leaders, gay rights activists, and family members of several of Dahmer's victims. Organizers stated that the purpose of the vigil was to enable Milwaukeeans to share their feelings and pain and anger over what happened. The Oxford Apartments in 924 North 25th Street, where Dahmer had killed 12 of his victims, were demolished in November 1992. The site is now a vacant lot. Alternate plans to convert the site into either a memorial garden, a playground, or to reconstruct new housing have failed to materialize. Dahmer's estate was awarded to the families of the 11 of his victims who had sued for damages. In 1996, Thomas Jacobson, a lawyer representing 8 of the families, announced a planned auction of Dahmer's estate. Although victims' relatives stated their motivation was not greed, the announcement sparked controversy. A civic group, Milwaukee Civic Pride, was quickly established in an effort to raise funds to purchase and destroy Dahmer's possessions. The group pledged $407,225, including a $100,000 gift by Milwaukee real estate developer Joseph Zilber for the purchase of Dahmer's estate. 5 of the 8 families represented by Jacobson agreed to the term, and Dahmer's possessions were subsequently destroyed and buried in undisclosed Illinois landfill. Lionel Dahmer is retired and now lives with his second wife, Sherry. Both have refused to change their surname and have professed their love for Dahmer in spite of his crimes. In 1994, Lionel published a book, A Father's Story, and donated a portion of the proceeds from his book to the victim's family. Most of the families showed support for Lionel and Sherry, although 3 families subsequently sued Lionel, 2 for using their name in the book without obtaining prior consent, and a 3rd family, that of Stephen Hicks, filing a wrongful death suit against Lionel, Sherry, and his former wife Joyce, citing parental negligence as the cause for the claim. Joyce Flint died of cancer in November 2000. Prior to her death, she had attempted suicide on at least one occasion. Dahmer's younger brother David changed his name and lives in anonymity. And that, my friends, concludes our talk of Jeffrey Dahmer. Next, I'm going to go over quickly all the names of his victims because they must be remembered. In 1978, June 18th, Stephen Mark Hicks. In 1987, November 20th, Stephen Walter Tuomi. In 1988, January 16th, Edward James Doxeter. And March 24th, Richard Guerrero. 1989, March 25th, Anthony Lee Sears. In 1990, May 20th, Raymond Lamont Smith. June 14th, Edward Warren Smith. September 2nd, Ernest Marquez Miller. September 24th, David Courtney Thomas. In 1991, February 18th, Curtis Durrell Strouder. April 7th, Errol Lindsay. May 24th, Tony Anthony Hughes. May 27th, Conrad Sinasophone. June 30th, Matt Cleveland Turner. July 5th, Jeremiah B. Weinberger. July 15th, Oliver Joseph Lacey, and July 19th, Joseph Arthur Braidhoft. If you have made it this far, you are awesome. I love you. Thank you for being a listener. I will continue to put out the true stories behind these serial killers, because I believe that the media sexualizes and franchises on them and uses them as a way to make money. And I believe that the facts need to be laid out there, that these are not good people. These people did horrible things. So next, actually, this will be a short one. So I'm going to be doing a bonus episode before Tuesday's podcast on Harold Frederick Shipman. If you don't know who he is literally the serial killer that has the most kills ever. And it's pretty interesting. So until then, y'all be safe, stay spooky. I'm D. Cooley, and I'm out.